wanted to discuss some basic ideas pertaining to the significance of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, as you know, is a complex kind of a day in terms of halacha. There are two different institutions of halacha that come together in Tisha B'Av. One, of course, is the aspect of mourning, that we're involved in the practices that pertain to a mourner, especially during the time of Shiva, which is the most severe period of mourning. And at the same time, it's also a day of fasting, but it's not an ordinary day of fasting. There's different degrees of fasts. And this has a lot in common with the fast of Yom HaKippurim. The five inuyim, the five afflictions that pertain today, it's not just eating and drinking, but refraining from bodily pleasures, the basic bodily pleasures such as washing and wearing shoes and the like that we're all familiar with. These are called inuyim, they're called afflictions, and they also apply in Yom HaKippurim. So there's something, a common denominator between Tisha B'Av and Yom HaKippurim. So I want to begin by asking a very simple question with regard to the whole idea of inui, the whole idea of affliction. It seems to me that there's a bit of a problem, at least a bit of a problem with the idea, in that does the Torah endorse this type of a concept? Superficially, you see sometimes people in other religions engage in certain types of afflictions. They beat themselves on their backs and things of that sort, and as some type of a religious service. It seems to me that in general, the Torah seems to be opposed to the idea of affliction. A person should not afflict themselves. The Rambam talks about this in Hilchos Deos. And he says that lest you think that since lust and honor and pursuit of all these material things is a bad thing, so I'll separate myself and I'll go to the other extreme, so that a person will refrain from eating meat or drinking wine, he won't get married, won't live in a nice dwelling, and will only wear very rough types of clothing. So that is to say, a person will impose upon themselves a regimen of affliction. Because that seems to be avoiding all these things that the Torah said are not good for you. So he says this person is considered to be a wicked person. He says, this is a derech ra. It's an evil path, and it's prohibited to live that way. That is to say, a person may not consciously choose that path of life, one which essentially deprives themselves of the basic pleasures, and beyond that, to afflict the body. There's a very strong attraction to that type of a thing. And he says, he brings proofs, he says, it says by Nazir, the Nazirite, who takes a vow just to refrain from wine, and he has to bring a sin offering. And what's the sin? Because he afflicted himself to the extent that wine is a legitimate pleasure, and he afflicted himself, so to that extent he's guilty. Of course, the question is, why does the Torah permit it? And that's because essentially it's a therapeutic measure. But the idea of affliction is contrary to Torah. It's interesting, the Gemara in Sukkah tries to work out how do we know that the four species that we utilize on the mitzvah is referred to as lulav. So how do we know which one the Torah is referring to? So when it takes up the discussion of Arvei Nachal, the willows, it discusses different options and different types of plants, and one of them seems to have all the characteristics, but it's very thorny, so that when you would pick it up, you'd be cutting your hands. So the Gemara says that can't be the one, because it says, Drachea Darchei Noam, her ways are ways of pleasantness. And therefore, you can't have a mitzvah which is essentially contrary to the whole idea of pleasantness. It is something which is painful. God did not command us in something which is painful. So I'm just raising the question, at least superficially, so that's the whole mitzvah. The mitzvah is not simply to fast, but the mitzvah is to anu with nafsho sechem, to afflict your souls. So I think that the answer is that it all depends on how you look at it. It's interesting that the very same thing, something which appears to be the same, it depends on how you look at it. It's a subtle difference. If you look at it as that the essence of the phenomenon is the affliction per se, and many people look at it that way, That's why, in my opinion, Yom Kippur is a very popular holiday on the Jewish calendar. Many people across the spectrum, not only Orthodox people, are pretty serious about Yom Kippur. I've known many Jews that are not Orthodox throughout the year, but they make it a point to observe Yom Kippur, to fast on Yom Kippur, even though throughout the year they may not keep Shabbos and they may violate all the laws of the Torah. That's why it's popular, along with Pesach. Pesach we understand is popular, because the Seder. And Hanukkah, we understand, has become very popular. But why would Yom Kippur become so popular? Because it seems to me that's very attractive, the element of suffering. Because the person does carry around a certain amount of guilt. Everybody has a certain amount of guilt. And factor in, if you're Jewish, then you have an additional element. It's like the neshama yisera, the extra neshama of guilt. So if that's the case, the idea is appealing on a certain psychological level, that a person feels that he fasted, that he went through the day, he deprived himself, that he suffered, and therefore there's some kind of an atonement in that. It's interesting to note also that I've had a deal over the course of years with many people, the so-called old-timers, are very stringent. Even if the doctors say they have to take medicines and therefore they have to drink something and break the fast, they really resist. They fight very very stubbornly against any type of infringement. Even if the halacha, even if I would say that it's mutter in this situation, permitted to, there's many people that would prefer to suffer and take risks, even if they're not religious all year round. Now, it seems to me that beneath that, there's a certain sense that if we suffer, if we sacrifice, if we go through a certain amount of pain, and that itself provides an atonement. And I don't think that's not the correct idea. That is something which perhaps exists in other religions. I think other religions maintain it, that there's something evil about the pleasures, about the body, and no, we indulge in it, but when a person withdraws and afflicts himself, that's a good thing. That's contrary to the idea of Yadis. That's not the idea of the fast. The whole idea of the fast is not in the affliction per se. There's no benefit in the affliction per se, but rather it is to remove oneself from all the distractions that pertain to the bodily involvements and to be involved in a positive process of tshuva. The whole kiyum of Yom HaKippurim is as a result of going through the inui to get involved in a positive process. So that's something which assists you in getting involved in a positive process. It's not for the sake of afflicting the body. A person can go through all types of exercises. If it's just to inflict pain, it doesn't do any good. But if it's because there's a positive goal, he's an athlete, he's training for a certain event, so there's something positive. I'm not saying positive from the standpoint of Judaism. I'm just using it as an example. Here too, the essential idea of the Inui of Yom Kippur is the positive concept of tshuva, and that's what provides the atonement. The fasting and the affliction is a vehicle for causing someone to be involved in that process. Of course, the question is, there are different elements in Judaism which obligate a person in tshuva, and that's the theme that I want to take up today. Tshuva manifests itself and makes an appearance in different situations. Of course, the one situation is the one we're talking about is Yom HaKippurim, is the Day of Atonement. And the question, of course, is what is the, I'll use the Hebrew term, it's called the Mechayev, the obligating factor. What is it about Yom Kippur that obligates a person to do tshuva? It seems to me that it's the realization of the phenomenon of judgment. That's that God is judging us. God is judging us is a very big idea. It calls to mind the very condition of our existence. Why do we exist? And that's something which a person doesn't think about. He just assumes, because that's the way it has to be, because he attaches great importance to his existence. So that's something which really can't be questioned. Other people's existences, however, that's something many people can't figure out. But when that is very difficult to understand, what benefit that could possibly have. But one's own existence is that's what else? That has to be. Of course, Yom Kippur teaches us that there's no such thing. That we are not responsible for our own existence. That's the idea of judgment. That we exist only because of the Supreme Being, that there's a Supreme Being who has true existence. And he is the ultimate reality. He's the creator, and he brought us into existence. As soon as a person realizes that central fact, he's a different person. That itself should be, in most people, should be enough to humble you and to cause you to turn and to put yourself on a correct path. And there's the idea of judgment. Judgment means that we merit existence only by virtue of being in line with the purpose. That if we just decide to live any way we choose, according to the Shriras Libo, according to the whims of our heart, so then we have no basis for existence. That's the idea of Yom HaKippurim. That's why Yom Kippur is the mechayev, it's an obligating factor in doing tshuva. There is another phenomenon that could occur. This is something which comes about every year. It's an abstract phenomenon. It doesn't manifest itself other than as something on the calendar, but it doesn't manifest itself in any other concrete way. There are other factors, and I think it's related to it. There are factors that occur, occurrences in our lives that are create an obligation for the person to do tshuva. And that, I'll put it under the heading of calamities, events of a calamitous nature. The Rambam talks about this in Hilchos Tainus, laws of fasts. And this is a positive command of the Torah, that when calamities, and we're talking about the community now, for today's purposes we'll be focusing on the community. Of course it does apply to an individual as well, but not in the same way. If an individual experiences calamities, that's also a factor which creates an obligation for tshuva, to repent. But that's operates in a slightly different way. As far as the community is concerned, if a calamity occurs to the community, a serious calamity, some type of a pestilence, some type of a plague, war, things of that sort, so then there's an obligation to engage in praying and blowing the trumpets, and declaring a fast, essentially all of the various activities that all have one aim. The aim of all these activities is to do tshuva. Of course, what does this have to do with it? That's not the way most people would respond to a crisis. Most people would seek to ameliorate the crisis, depending on what it is. But over here, in my opinion, this is connected to the idea of Yom Kippur. But it's in a different way. Yom Kippur is also a crisis, but it's purely in the abstract. Everything can be nice, everything can be smooth in your life, and you'd have no reason to suddenly introspect, but it's purely abstract. It's your awareness of the fact that there's a phenomenon of divine judgment which is expressing itself at this time. But other than that, nothing concrete. The basic idea of Yom Kippur, that everything exists because it was created by God, and God relates to His creation, and God governs the world, and there's a phenomenon that goes with that the idea of reward and punishment. That when a person acts in one way, so then God responds, the divine providence responds in one way. When a person acts in a different way, so then there's the phenomenon of punishment. Here you have it in the concrete. When a calamity occurs to the community, to the tzibur, so then it is a concrete manifestation of judgment. Now you're seeing it, now it's not abstract anymore, now you're feeling it, now it hits home. So this calls to mind that idea that there are two different levels of causation. This is extremely important in Jewish consciousness, the two different levels of causation. There's the immediate physical level of causation, and for most people that's about all there is. And they are only interested in looking at the natural causes. But if you're the Jewish people, as far as the Jewish people is concerned, there's no such thing. There is, of course, the natural, but it's not limited to that. There's the metaphysical, there's the so-called supernatural, beyond the natural. And that is to say, it's an expression of punishment for our sins, and therefore, it is a mitzvah to respond in kind, and to investigate, and to look into it, and to find out what the sins were. And to the contrary, the Rambam says that if a person denies, a person just treats it as a matter of nature. And for example, today, all the different problems. We have plenty of communal problems today. Israel, for example, to the extent that Israel insists on dealing with its problems in accordance with natural political means, military means, and so forth, that's all well and good. They have to do that according to the Torah. They're not permitted to just sit by and wait for God to save them. However, to the extent that certain people persist in maintaining that that's all it is, it's just a purely political phenomenon, and it's no different than any other nation, just the way it manifests itself, and denies the element of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, denies the element of God, that is the worst possible sin. That's kfira, that's denial. And the Rambam says that this is the punishment, the so-called rebuke of the Torah, the tochacha. That as a result of that, then the mako, so to speak, the blows will become stronger. Because until people come to the realization that nothing happens in this area in accordance with purely natural law. Everything is divine providence, insofar as it affects the tzibur. So that's the second aspect of tshuva. When events occur which are a manifestation in concrete form of the abstract idea that everything exists because of the will of the Creator, when those events occur, it creates the obligation to do tshuva. There is another factor which creates an obligation of tshuva. And I don't know how many people are aware of this. The Hebrew term, of course, is avelos, is mourning. When a person goes into mourning for the loss of a relative, one of the seven relatives, so everybody knows about mourning. And people, I think, are pretty much only familiar with the external manifestations of mourning. The prohibitions, this prohibitions, some of them I've mentioned already apply to us today. Other prohibitions, the refrainings from social get-togethers and the like. However, it's more than that. Here too, the halacha is not just based upon the idea of abstaining. It's not just based upon the idea of refraining. Let me just read it to you from the Rambam. The Rambam in the Laws of Mourning, in chapter 13, he talks about the extremes, that a person should avoid extremes when it comes to mourning. It's interesting because either extreme, too much, or too little, is a serious defect. He says a person shouldn't go to the extreme of mourning over their deceased too much. And there's a certain limitation, certain natural order. Essentially, after a year has gone by, a person has fulfilled the basic need to mourn. Then he says, whoever does not mourn, as the rabbis have commanded, this person, he calls him achzari, he's a cruel person. Interesting. One would not have thought of that term, cruel. You thought that he's self-centered, selfish type of person. He calls him a cruel person. And at one time, I heard an interesting explanation that I'd like to share with you. You have to know the Hebrew term. The Hebrew term for a cruel is achzar. An achzar is a cruel person. The word achzar, according to this explanation, is really a compound. Ach and zar. Zar means a stranger. Ach, but, only a stranger. That is to say that the person, the element of cruelty is that a person can't identify with somebody else. He has a cruel person is one that has a total disdain, cannot attribute any value to any other human life. That's what the essence. See, that's what the essence of cruelty is. It originates in that separation, the inability to identify. He's achzar, it's a stranger. So he says, Ella yipached v'yidag, but rather he should be frightened and he should worry. What should he be frightened about? And what should he be worried about? A person experienced a loss, he's supposed to be frightened, he's supposed to be worried. What? That it could happen to him? What does that have to do with anything? What does that have to do with mourning? V'yafashvesh b'maisav, and he should examine his deeds. V'yachsa b'tshuva, and he should be chozer, he should return in tshuva. That's a far cry from what most people think that avelus is about. Here too, however, what has happened is that an event has occurred in your life which the halacha demands that you utilize as an opportunity. It's an obligation. You see, therefore, it would seem, if a person just goes through the motions of mourning, observes them scrupulously, doesn't engage in things that are prohibited, but does not get involved in this, is lacking. Is lacking a significant element of the mitzvah. A significant element of the mitzvah is that it's not just the refraining. A person has to go through a process of transformation to do tshuva. But what's causing it? What's the connection? What does this have to do with tshuva? Seems to me that the very fact that there are people who negate the phenomenon of death, who seek to block it out, who don't mourn, already indicates what the issue is. The phenomenon over here is the realization of death. That the greatest obstacle for a person living a correct life, one of the greatest obstacles, is something that affects everybody, is the inability to come to terms with one's own demise. That's something that is very difficult. It's very difficult for a person to relate the idea of death to themselves. Death is something which happens to others, by definition, for most people. They have the quality, or whatever, the weakness that leads to death. That exists. You understand that because you look around you and people are dying all the time. That's because they possess something which causes a weakness. People look down on it, they have a weakness, but they cannot associate that to themselves. So therefore, it leaves the sense that for you, you're always going to live. Immortality. And that's why you have people that negate, that can't identify with death. When they make all kinds of jokes, because it's a painful subject. However, the halacha says that this is an opportunity for you to break down, to remove the biggest barrier. The biggest barrier to tshuva is the sense that the way you are now, it's going to be endless. And as long as a person thinks it's going to be endless, he's going to be completely subsumed in his materialistic fantasy. He's going to be chasing all of his pursuits, his fantasies. He could be 95 years old, he has the same dreams, the same fantasies, he hasn't learned a thing. As though, you know, all this will be relevant forever. The Rambam mentions this, interestingly enough, and we've talked about this. Where do we see, what mitzvah reflects the idea that a person gets caught up in the fantasies of the time, his pursuits, his dreams, his next accomplishment, his achievement, his next step on the road? He has to just make it to the next bev. He can just make that next highway, you know, that next accomplishment. That's it. That's what. Of course, he gets there. Sometimes he doesn't get there. He spends the rest of his life trying to get there. Then he does get there and experiences tremendous disappointment. Well, this is not enough. This is another one. You have to have another conquest. But what, there's a mitzvah that reflects this idea. The mitzvah is the mitzvah of mezuzah. The Rambam tells us that the mitzvah of mezuzah is very, very important. And not for the reasons that most people think. That because if you put it up and you make sure that there's no letters. Not because if anything goes wrong in your life, you should check it, and if you find there's something missing from a letter, you'll fix the letter. That's not the reason that the Rambam gives. The Rambam says because whenever you enter into the house and whenever you leave, you encounter a phenomenal idea. And if you will internalize this idea, it'll protect you. It's a protection. The idea that the only thing that endures, the only thing that's permanent, the only thing that is eternal, is Yediyas Tzur HaOlamim, the knowledge of the rock of the world. That's what makes you eternal. To the extent that you come closer to the source of all eternity, to the extent that you recognize that the only ultimate reality is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, and God placed us in this world and gave us the capacity to utilize our divinely constructed intelligence to know Him, to appreciate the wisdom that leads us to Him and to perfect our souls, that's life, and that's eternal life. Oh, but we get caught up. He says you get caught up in the Havlei Asman, in the vanities of the time. So every time you enter, you take a look at the mezuzah and remember, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. That's the to think about that idea and to realize that everything else is secondary. Don't get subsumed by it. So the idea over here too, in my opinion, is the phenomenon of death. The phenomenon of death causes the person to realize that this is going to happen to him as well, that life is temporary. The physical, emotional, instinctual aspect of life is temporary, and if we utilize it properly, it could be a source of eternity through the vehicle of the Yediyas Tzur Olam. That's why he must do tshuva. Now, what about Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av is a very interesting phenomenon. As I mentioned at the very beginning, Tisha B'Av combines two different elements. The elements of the fast, not just the fast, but the elements of Inui, of affliction, and the elements of mourning. The question, of course, is this the same type of mourning that we just discussed? There's two different terms I use. The mourning that we go through when you have a loss of a relative is called Avelos Chadasha. Chadash means new. That the mourning over a new tragedy, something that pertains to something in your life. The term that's used for the Avelos of Tisha B'Av is Avelos Yeshana, ancient. Because really, it's an amazing idea. You're mourning for the loss of something which basically you never had, which you never experienced. You never had in the first place. It's a conundrum. It's a little bit of a, how could I mourn for something that I didn't lose? I didn't lose it. I didn't have it. I can't envision. I never had the Beis HaMikdash. We never partook of it, so how did we lose it if we never had it? It's not a simple thing. But I just want to make it clear, and this is a very important idea, we alluded to it this morning, that Judaism is different than any other system, culture, in that we don't have a phenomenon of memorial days, strictly speaking. And the Gentiles do not have the phenomenon of something like Tisha B'Av. That's why Rabbi Soloveitchik maintained, and I think it's a point that we all have to really take to heart. A big mistake has been made with regard to the remembrance of the Holocaust. Of course, I'm not saying in my opinion, it is in my opinion, but this is one of the teachings of Rabbi Soloveitchik, that it is wrong to have a separate day for the Holocaust. It's not just wrong, the way I understand it, by doing so, you're not really remembering the Holocaust. Because what it's doing is, it's just making a memorial day. We don't have memorial days. Secular countries have memorial days. We had Memorial Day for the fallen. For 9/11, there'll be a memorial day. But that simply means that you're paying tribute to something. You're paying tribute to the memory of something. Or you're remembering something which has some historical importance. That is not the concept of Tisha B'Av at all. It's not a memorial day. It's not to remember the destruction of the Mikdash. We remember the destruction of the Mikdash virtually every day in many different ways. What happens as a result of this is that, unfortunately, the Holocaust is never truly observed. It hasn't found a place because it's overly remembered in the wrong way. It's been completely secularized. And it becomes a purely historical phenomenon. It's history, and it's being treated as history. And all the historians who use historical methods are the ones that are involved in memorializing it. That's a complete falsification. The idea of a Tisha B'Av, the idea of all of the events that we describe in the kinos, is based upon the idea that the Jew, nothing happens to the Jewish people as a result of history. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is not a historical event, it's a metaphysical phenomenon. It didn't happen because of natural causes. God utilized natural causes to bring it about, but the underlying cause was the providential relationship of God to the Jewish people. If you omit that factor, then you're not a Tisha B'Av. It's not Tisha B'Av, it's just some historical event. If you omit the factor of the providential element of the Holocaust, so that's not, we don't believe that's the Holocaust. The Holocaust is not what the Nazis did and so on and so forth. The Holocaust is a bigger story. It's a story about how God related to his people. And that's the big mystery surrounding the Holocaust. And therefore, we did mention this morning, we made a point of mentioning, reciting a number of keynotes that did deal with the Holocaust, because the only way that you could deal with it is through the framework of Tisha B'Av, which is a different type of avelus. It's purely abstract, and it's a recognition of something which is very, very vital, that, as I said, that the destruction of the Mikdash is not a historical phenomenon. That happened to people a few thousand years ago, but now it pertains equally to us. It's a metaphysical phenomenon, which was brought about by certain corruptions, by certain defects in the Jewish people. As a result of these defects, the entire situation, the entire relationship between God and the Jewish people was altered in a very, very significant way, and it's not history. Because if it was history, so what's the difference? You may be interested, you may not be interested. It doesn't matter if it's just history. The point of it is that we maintain that there's a link, that the historical forces, that the sins that took place at that time brought about a tremendous and reflect defects within the Jewish people. And as the Chazal say, these are transmitted through the ages. The Chazal say that every generation in which the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt in its time, it's as though it was destroyed. That is to say, that if we were to observe properly, if we were to introspect, if we were to correct the defects that were responsible for the destruction, we were to do tshuva and return to God, then the Rambam says, immediately, miyad, immediately we'd be redeemed. So this is our problem. This is something that pertains to us. We have to mourn. We have to mourn because we partake of the defects. And it's vitally significant for us to review all of these events, not from a historical perspective. However, there's something which is very, very difficult over here. And that is, as has been pointed out by many rabbis, I believe Rabbi Soloveitchik and other rabbis have pointed out, that it takes a person on a very high level to mourn for the loss of the Mikdash, for the loss of the temple. Let's face it. We didn't see it. We didn't know it. It seems to be beyond. So theoretically, you can read about it and how wonderful it was when we lived together and the entire nation served God, and at the center you had the Mikdash, and the system of Judaism was operating at its in its most pristine form. A person has to be at an exceedingly high level to get to real mourning that we don't have that anymore. That's a very, very difficult thing to do. It's a very difficult thing to do. And at the same time, it's vitally important for us to do it. We can't avoid it. If we don't do it, so then we're caught in a catch-22. Because this is a reality. This is serious. If we don't do tshuva, we're just they're sitting around, waiting, dreaming, whatever. Then whatever we say is meaningless. I mean, the whole idea is to recognize this is the reality. This is what determines the situation that we're in. So on the one hand, it's very difficult to relate to the day. On the other hand, it's vitally important to do so. So therefore, I believe that's why the combination, that there are two aspects to the day. It's a day of mourning, but you don't have the phenomenon of fasting by the new mourning. By mourning for a relative, you don't have the phenomenon of fasting. There's no need to put a person, to force a person to refrain from eating and drinking, to go to such extremes. Because there, it's a natural emotional response. Everybody naturally is going to feel the mourning. So then it's just a question of taking something which you feel, you're in a certain state, and utilizing it properly for the sake of the introspection. But here you need something which is more significant. If a person would be in their natural state, they could eat, they could drink, and so forth, this type of mourning is so abstract, they wouldn't become involved in it. So it seems to me that that could be the reason why the rabbis decreed that it should be a day of inui, of affliction, as well, to put a person, to remove a person forcefully from any distraction, from any involvement in any of the pleasures, and thereby forcing the person to focus on the avelus aspect of the day. Precisely because it's the it's avelus yeshana, it's avelus for something which happened in the past, which is outside of the framework of the natural emotional makeup of the ordinary person. Just quickly, it's interesting to note that one of the things everybody who's been a mourner knows is one of the things a mourner is prohibited in is the study of Torah. You're not allowed to study Torah. So you're not allowed to study Torah when you're in mourning. Why? Because Lasam Chaylev. Okay. That the Torah rejoices the heart, so it's a form of joy. That's the people on a very high level. Can you imagine? A people on such a high level of love of the truth that it's so enjoyable to them that when they're in mourning and prohibited from pleasure, they can't study Torah. That's a very high level. As far as Tisha B'Av is concerned, the same thing. You can't study Torah, but here it's different. Here you are permitted to study the Dvar Marayim, those parts of the Tanakh, Yirmiyahu, that talks about the destruction, the calamities. The question, there's a big question as to whether an ordinary mourner who's prohibited from Torah, is he permitted to study those things that you're allowed to study on Tisha B'Av, because it's the evil things, that the afflictions and so forth that occur to the Jewish people. So there's difference of opinions. But the Rambam maintains that no. The Rambam maintains that a mourner for a relative cannot study any Torah at all, even those things that would be permitted on Tisha B'Av. Because he says, Hayonik Dom, that he's supposed to be silent, in a state of silence. He can't engage in any kind of friendship, discourse, Torah discourse, silent. But on Tisha B'Av he is permitted. So what's the reason? What was it? It has to do with the fact that you're dealing with two different types of avelos and two different types of mourning. The mourning for a relative, the objective of that is to show kavod hames. It's an expression of honor to the deceased, and that's what's creating the prohibition. So therefore, to engage in your normal activities, or to engage in business activities, to engage in Torah activities, which is a pleasure. Torah is very, very selfish. It's a selfish phenomenon. To engage in that type of thing is lacking in respect for the race, even though it's Torah. So therefore, even the Dvar Marayim should be Yirmiyahu, even those things which are calamitous and do not necessarily cause joy to study them, would be prohibited for someone who's in mourning for a relative. Because it's the lack of kavod hames. But it's interesting, as far as the Avelus Yeshana, the Avelus that we're talking about, for Tisha B'Av, that is different. That's not kavod hames, that's not showing honor to the deceased. But that is it's the recognition of the calamity. That the calamity that occurred is a calamity for us. Because, as I said, the natural reaction of a person is that it's history, it's gone, it doesn't have anything to do with us. So there, and it's very, very abstract. A person is not naturally in an emotional state of mourning because the temple was destroyed. That's not going to happen naturally, as it would with a relative dying. That happens naturally. So therefore, to the contrary, I would say that not only is it permitted to study those areas that pertain to the destruction, to the calamity, and that bring about that sense of sadness, that sense of mourning for it, but I would say, I'd go even further and say that it's feasible that it's a mitzvah, that you're obligated to do so as well. That the study of the Dvarim HaRoyim Shebiyumiyahu, the study of the evil things that cause the heart to ponder about these terrible tragedies, and to lead us back to thinking about what the reason is, and ultimately that something went awry in our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that type of study, as I said, is permitted, and I'm saying, on the basis of what I'm saying now, that the reason that is permitted is not to be understood because it avoids the problem of having pleasurable things. It somehow gets around that. If that's the case, it would just be permitted to do. I'm saying no. That the reason why one is permitted to do it is precisely because that's what you're supposed to be doing. The whole concept of the day is to be involved mentally in a remembrance of these terrible things and a realization of how they apply to us, and that we have the burden and we have the obligation and we have the responsibility to do tshuva and to bring about a change in Klal Yisrael, to bring these calamities to an end. If that's the case, I'd say it's a mitzvah to do so. So that is the obligation that we have upon us. And we read it in the Kisolid Bunim. I just want to conclude with this word. In the Torah reading of today, it predicts that when the Jews will sin, the whole idea,
And we can't deviate from the whole idea. Everything that shaped our destiny is the fact that we failed to fulfill the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of our obligation to be a holy nation and to properly fulfill the Torah. And we sinned, we departed from that. And it says, Avaratem Sham, in those lands that I disperse you, you will worship other gods, wooden stone, you'll worship idols. And it always bothered me that the Jews throughout history, no matter what you want to say, they always resisted idol worship, they always resisted conversion. And the overwhelming majority of cases, when they were faced with that choice, they gave up their lives rather than convert. So why? What is it saying that you'll worship there? So Rashi says an amazing point. He says that it doesn't mean literally, it's since you're subservient to those who worship the idol, you're subservient to idolatry. Which means to say that the greatest battle that we have to face is the fact that we live in, even in America, which embraces, without anti-Semitism, to the contrary, that it embraces us and gives us all the freedoms, the many, many ways in which we become assimilated. And I don't mean just assimilated where a person stops observing the mitzvahs. Even people that observe the mitzvahs, the assimilation of the values of the hedonism, of the materialism, of all of the cultural elements and the philosophies that permeate, the false philosophies that permeate the society, that's the greatest danger that we face today. And each and every one of us has to take to heart on this day that we're part of the cloud. And everyone is part of the cloud, especially those that observe and keep the Torah, has a special obligation to go above and beyond that, to do tshuva, and not to allow our Judaism to be just something perfunctory, but to be something significant and meaningful and based upon the true ideas, and to uproot the false ideas that have crept into our minds and our hearts as a result of this terrible assimilation that we've been living in.